Welcome to Visions. My name is Piero Holloway, and technology plays a big part in our daily lives. Indeed, the COVID-19 pandemic has seen the emergence of a lot of areas of technology being used more than they used to, and the fact that we can actually go across the sea to Trinidad and have a discussion with Mr. Sean Melville, who I am told is pretty an expert on certain aspects of technology. To talk to him shows how technology is working. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thank you, Mr. Holloway, for the invitation. So you're right, I am an expert in some regards. I am the managing director and co-founder of Ipsum Technologies, and we are focused on improving the accessibility of technology for persons with disabilities. And I've been working on that for the last 6 years.
6 years. Now, how has this been going for you in Trinidad? Because in Barbados, I would say that we have a slow adoption as it relates to the use of technology, as it relates to making a person who is disabled more independent. So I'm keen to know, what is the response of Trinidadians towards what you're doing?
Okay. So initially, just to give you a quick backstory as to how we got started, 6 years ago, I would have met my co-founder, Marlon Parejo, who's totally blind. And Marlon had this idea that he wanted to create a device called the Mobi Assist to help him navigate.
The Mobi Assist?
And yes, the Mobi Assist. So he pitched an idea, and I quite liked it. I felt that it was possible for me to work on it with him because I had worked on some other projects regarding Google self-driving cars. And I felt that if it was possible for a car to drive itself, a person who can't see should be able to use similar technologies to be able to assess what's in front of them and then be able to automatically get instructions as to how to get around those obstacles.
Okay.
And so we actually worked on that, and we developed the concept. We built a prototype, rough prototype initially, and then later on a more functional prototype. And so that is what got us started. And we got financing from the government of Trinidad and Tobago through their Idea to Innovation program at the point in time, which allowed us to be able to work with the University of Western East to actually create a prototype. So that's just to give you a quick idea.
Is this mobile assist being used widely in Trinidad right now?
So, no, it's not. It hasn't gotten the adoption as yet in terms of we were able to create a prototype. But to get from a prototype to a product is a sort of a gargantuan task, in that there are a number of things that is required for you to be able to even bring an electronic device to market with respect to, like, testing and getting FCC certification, etc. So that would have required an additional tranche of investment, which we have not been able to get as yet.
As yet. So what what does this device do?
What it does is it detects obstacles within the environment using ultrasonics, which allows you to measure the distance of a specific obstacle. And then what we do is we utilize an application on the phone to analyze that information, because it sends it back from the device itself to the cell phone. The cell phone then computes whether there's an obstacle, whether it detects an obstacle to the left, to the right, so directly in front of the person. And then it gives them feedback in the form of a short instruction which says left clear, right block, right clear, left block, or both, or stop if something is directly in front of you.
So this is attached to a cane for the blind?
In this case, no. It's not attached to the cane. It's actually attached to the chest. The initial prototype design is attached to the chest, and it allows for that person to be able to detect obstacles 180 degrees in terms of to the left, to the right, and some obstacles up to head height and some obstacles down to the ground. Right?
Did you see this device replacing the cane for the blind or being an assistive device in conjunction with the cane for the blind?
Well, initially, it would be used in conjunction with the cane. However, I mean, as technology advances, what we hope is that you would be able to increase the rate of detection to the point where you don't need to have the cane anymore.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So that is the end goal. But in terms of the initial step, it would be to identify obstacles that would guide the person who is blind, so that if there is, for example, a pole or there's a low-hanging branch, which the cane can't detect that this particular device would have a sufficient resolution to be able to pick up these different obstacles, and therefore it may prevent the person who is blind from walking straight into a tree branch and possibly even losing their eye, right?
Understand. So you said that was your initial project. So I'm assuming that you have other things working on right now?
Yes, correct. So we did use that prototype to be able to get access to market and to get support. So I have presented it at various conferences, for instance, Accessible Americas, as well as the LACNIC LACNOG in Panama. That was late last year. And so coming out of that, I have been able to build a network of persons who I can reach out to. And so there are a lot of other opportunities that have been coming to us. So we have more or less pivoted from development of the device to actually digital accessibility, which focuses on accessibility of websites as well as mobile devices. And how do you, as a web developer, create something which might be an application on a phone, on a desktop, or on a web that allows a person with varying types of disabilities to access that information and to get access to services in a way that everyone else can? Anybody who doesn't have a disability should be able to use the web just like anybody who has a disability or not, right? So we want to make sure that everybody is on an equal footing, and that requires a bit of design thinking and a knowledge of the various types of disabilities and the modes in which people would use the technology. So, for instance, most of us, we rely heavily on our sight to be able to use any object. But if you don't have sight, then you need to know, rely on your hearing, rely on other senses like touch and smell to be able to access different aspects of the environment. And so it's the same thing with the visual space. Or digital accessibility would look into utilizing those other senses, for example, hearing and touch, to be able to guide the person who may not have sight to be able to utilize, let's say, for a website. So they would use something like a screen reader or a screen magnifier to be able to access the content on a website or on a mobile
phone. For the benefit of the listening public, we would know that your Android phone, iPhone, and Windows devices, those are the three main manufacturers of devices, whether laptop or cell phone, have assistive technology in them already, or what is labeled accessibility features. So my question is, is your intention to enhance these existing features on these devices, or what we call a third-party application that would run on top of them?
Okay, so no, the intention is not to enhance those features. The device makers would be the ones to work on developing those. But the good thing is that because there have been standards that have been developed with respect to accessibility and for content authoring or for device makers, we can build on top of that in terms of creating applications that would use those accessibility features. So, for instance, on an Android phone, there's TalkBack, and on an iOS, there's some VoiceOver. What you can do is when you're creating your application, you take into consideration that a person who is blind would be utilizing those screen readers on their phones, and you design your application in such a way that you allow it to you understand how the application is going to utilize the semantic structure of HTML to navigate the page. And then the person who is using, whether it's gestures or if they're on the keyboard, using keyboard shortcuts, will be able to navigate the page utilizing that semantic structure. So let's say you go onto a website and the first thing that the screen reader is going to read is the title of the page. So if you were designing a website and you didn't put a title to that page, it's just going to sit on title page, right? And that's not very meaningful for anybody, even for someone who doesn't have a disability in terms of visual impairment. So it's important to understand how the standards work out and then how you design specifically for various types of disabilities.
There's an idea that suggests that big manufacturers like Google and Samsung and Microsoft are developing their accessibility features so as to allow users not to have to depend on third-party software. And we would have seen in the past, certainly in the early days, I used to use a program called ZoomText, which allowed me to manipulate the size of the font on the screen. And now Windows Magnifier is more robust than that program. So but my question is, how do you now get around? Now, I'm not going to say competing, but it does make you feel like you're having to compete with the accessibility features that are simultaneously being developed by big manufacturers as opposed to what you are doing right now. How do you get over that obstacle?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not actually competing with the big manufacturers. In fact, what they're doing helps to make my job a little bit easier. Because if the devices already have built-in accessibility and I'm building an application that utilizes that accessibility feature, it makes it easier for me. And the clearer they make their documentation, it makes it easier for me to understand, for instance, how that particular application works. So when I build an application that works, that needs to be made accessible, right? Whether it's a JavaScript widget or the general layout of CSS and HTML layout of a web page and the navigational structure of it, I would understand how the nuances between different built-in accessibility tools, whether it's like Narrator on the Windows or VoiceOver on Mac, how those tools are going to actually be utilized by someone who has a visual impairment to navigate the website or the application.
Now, following on from your statement, how are you finding the development of accessible features on devices now as opposed to, say, 3-4 years ago?
Well, the accuracy of it is increasing, and you are also finding that as new technologies develop, that they are being incorporated into these devices. So, for example, you have artificial intelligence that can now take voice to text, and the accuracy of that is reaching near 99% accuracy. So let's say you had to speak into your phone and have that translated into text and potentially even into another language, you can actually use that those artificial intelligence libraries to create a sort of assistive technology that could help you to communicate with anybody, regardless of whether the person is blind or if they're deaf, because you can make use of it. And if they speak another language, you configure the application to say, okay, well, I want it to translate from English to Spanish. You can do that, and you can more or less communicate in real time. So the technology is there now, but the adoption of it, or I would say sometimes the understanding of it, is not generally there in terms of whether it's with developers and the mainstream public.
That brings me to the next question. How do you find in your work the acceptance, utilization of what is existing now by those who is intended for, the persons with disabilities?
Okay, so I have two sorts of target markets in terms of how I have structured my operations. So there are the business owners who want to develop a website and need to make the content that they are producing accessible. And their main focus may not necessarily be accessibility, but that comes part and parcel of what I offer to them. And so it indirectly benefits persons with disabilities, because if I can build an application for a customer that would be open to the public, that they would be able to go onto that website and know that they can access the features and functionality of the site. Right? It is still somewhat challenging to design for all types of disabilities because it takes a little bit longer, it's a lot more costly, and sometimes you may not fully understand how persons with disabilities, depending on where they fall in the disability spectrum, how they're going to interact with the device. Go ahead.
So you find that it is easier to work with the blind and visually impaired right now than other types of disabilities?
It is to some extent a little bit easier, because I think a lot more work has gone into that. So there's more documentation to say, okay, this is how you lay out a web page, and this is how the screen reader is going to read the tags on the page. So to the HTML semantics, you can actually get most of the accessibility features built in sufficiently for someone who is blind. But there are still some challenges in that if you have to create something written in JavaScript and it doesn't allow you to, or you haven't figured out, perhaps you don't fully understand how the person who is blind may have to be notified of certain errors that might have happened in a form, then you could create something that is semantically fine, but the functionality is not communicating the information appropriately to the person who's using the technology, right?
So what would you say then would be the solution for this? Do we have to make persons with disabilities more aware of what is there, more training for them?
Well, I wouldn't say it's only for the person with the disabilities. I think persons with disabilities can only do so much in terms of their presence. No, they can lobby, they can share information. I think what will help is that if persons with disabilities were to get involved in web development or app development, even as a tester, that would help, because then development agencies now could look to them to say, okay, what do you need? Is this, we have put our best into working on this application. We think it meets your needs, but we need you to test it and tell us, okay, yes, this works fine for the majority of us, or no, there are certain errors that you didn't think of, and so we think you can change it. And even better, for those persons who are technologically inclined, get involved in the web development to be, yeah.
And that brings me to the question of, for the ordinary person, because the ordinary disabled person are not at the level where they understand web development or,
right.
App coding or whatever. And we want them to be testers. We want them to be able to use this and say, well, Sean, this is where this is falling down. It's not meeting my needs. But we're having the issue where you're not finding persons who can even manipulate a device to the extent that they can give relevant feedback. And I'm asking, yeah. How do we get around that? Because obviously, an app will be no good if you can't find a person to test it and get feedback of it or to use it. So how do you suggest we bring the average person up to speed to the extent that they can aid in what you're doing?
Okay, all right. That's a great question. So I think to get around some of the challenges, because it sounds as though a lot of persons need to even be aware as to how to navigate certain devices, right? So it would mean that firstly you'd have to reach out to them, either through friends and family or through the institutions that they engage with, and get them to come together to join workshops. And then you would need to have devices that are available there for them to use over a period of time, and have like a structured program where they can learn the various features and functionalities that are built into those devices. So I think that would at least get the majority of persons to the point where they can leverage the technology to access the information.
Do you find that in your country you have people who are enthusiastic enough to want to make that leap?
I would say, I think that there's not, there's two aspects of this. One has to do with awareness, and so there isn't enough being done to make the public aware, or even whether it's at the government level or the groups of developers, for them to understand the need for accessibility. And so if there isn't sufficient advocacy, other issues take precedence. Right, so that would be my first answer to that. The second answer to that question is that there isn't sufficient organization to be able to say, okay, well, we have various groups, whether it's groups of persons with disabilities or persons associated with persons with disabilities coming together to say that we can all self-organize and determine what the issues are amongst ourselves and what should be the priority message. And in the absence of that, then whatever issues you have typically stay within your grouping, but it never gets out there into the general public. So if people don't know, then you can't really do anything about it.
One of the problems with accessibility and technology, and this came out in the Accessible America's meeting last November in Ecuador, is the cost of technology making it inaccessible to persons with disabilities. So
yeah.
To bring that down in a simple form, disabled persons cannot afford the devices that they need to use to make them independent. How do you suggest we overcome such a thing?
That is a tricky and very challenging question.
Other than you give people more money to buy things, that's
Yes, I totally understand it, and I've grappled with that particular challenge because it means that, one, as you identified, people need to have more money. And in a capitalist society, it can be challenging because you find that there's this prevailing thought that you must be the one to, you must earn everything, right? In a sense, you have to be competitive, you have to get out in the job market, and your value is based upon what you contribute. And if you're a person with a disability and you are stymied by the fact that you don't have access to the technology, then you can't contribute and therefore you can't earn.
That's true.
And it means that therefore, you need to have social safety nets, whether it's in terms of grants or general understanding by the population that we are not just going to support those who don't have disabilities, but we're going to put things in place to help persons regardless of their ability so that you can access the things that you need. And that's really about equity and not really just equality.
Now, we are in the COVID-19 pandemic situation, which is new for all of us, every single person it has affected. And one of the things that has happened is that the reliance on technology is, how would I put it, a bit more heavy than before, in that we have e-learning, we have working from home virtually, we have virtual meetings via Zoom and whatever, and you kind of get the impression that we will have to use this technology more for the next foreseeable future. And I'm wondering, do you think that this is a good step in the right direction as it relates to us as persons with disabilities being able to capitalize on the the insurgence of technology?
Okay, so I would preface what I'm going to say by assuming that everyone is able to have access to the technology and have access to internet, right? It would be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing if nothing is done about that, right? And so, as you mentioned, persons with disabilities firstly need to understand how the technology works and how to interface with it. And then they need to have the finances to be able to purchase devices in order for that to even be possible. And so it has the potential, yes, to bring opportunities to persons with disabilities in that you can work from home, you'd no longer have the barriers of transportation, barriers of sometimes the fear of going out on your own, especially if you don't have, if you're in a wheelchair, it's certainly much more difficult to travel because you have to pay usually for private transportation to take you to and fro if the public transportation isn't at the level where there's a lot of features and functionalities built into the transport vehicle itself to accommodate a wheelchair, right? So there is potential, but to realize that potential, you have to firstly overcome that initial barrier to access.
Well, Sean, we're out of time, and I really have enjoyed this program because I think I share a lot of your ambition for really putting technology in the hands of persons with disabilities. And I would very much like you to come back and so we can continue the discussion about technology and what you're doing as a developer to enhance the lives of persons with disabilities.
I really want to thank you, and I look forward to having a second conversation with you on the topic. It's something that I'm deeply passionate about, and I have dedicated a significant portion of my life towards working on this, and I hope to see a real change and transformation in the Caribbean and throughout the world. for persons with disabilities.
Thank you.